Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Osisko Gold Royalties Q4 and year 2021 results conference call. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Please note that this call is being recorded today, February 25, 2022 at 10 A.M. Eastern Time. Today on the call, we have Mr. Sandeep Singh, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Frédéric Ruel, Chief Financial Officer and Vice President, Finance. I would now like to turn the meeting over to our host for today's call, Mr. Sandeep Singh. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, et bienvenue à l'appel conférence des résultats du quatrième trimestre et de l'année 2021 de Redevances Aurifères Osisko Limited. Après la présentation, nous procéderons à une séance de questions-réponses. Si vous désirez poser une question, veuillez appuyer sur la touche étoile suivie du numéro un. Veuillez prendre note que cet appel est enregistré aujourd'hui, le 25 février 2022 à 10 heures, heure de l'Est. Nous avons sur l'appel d'aujourd'hui Monsieur Sandeep Singh, Président et Chef de la Direction, et Monsieur Frédéric Ruel, Chef de la Direction Financière et Vice-Président Finance. J'aimerais maintenant céder la parole à votre hôte, Monsieur Sandeep Singh.
Thanks very much, operator. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Thanks everyone for joining us this morning. I know it's a busy end to the week, a lot of people reporting, so thanks for taking the time. We'll try to go through the prepared materials reasonably quickly and leave enough time for questions. Please note if you don't already have it, the deck that I'll be walking through with Fred is on the website, and we will be making forward-looking statements as we talk through it. Jumping to slide three, just in terms of a very high-level recap, we had another exceptionally strong quarter. Our assets continued to perform well and provide significant catalysts that are playing out, which we'll touch on some of them as we go through the document. In 2021, 80,000 GEOs earned, gold equivalent ounces, as you know, that was pre-released. That includes contributions from Renard, which again, we will talk about later as coming back online this year, resulting in record revenues of just shy of 200 million, record operating cash flows as well. You know, this year we expect significantly more ounces. We'll still have a very high and frankly peer-leading margin at around 93%. That coupled with, you know, still a strong gold price here today, certainly volatile, but higher than the $1,800 an ounce we averaged in 2021 should lead, we expect, to continued records on a number of fronts. There was a little bit of noise in the financials, mainly resulting or sorry, stemming from a non-cash impairment in Osisko Development of to the tune of $48 million in the quarter. Really those were legacy assets in the James Bay area, Coulon, and in Guerrero. Exploration stage assets that the company is not focusing on and felt it relevant to take that down given their focus is on their other three main assets. Taking that aside, we earned adjusted earnings of $0.14 a quarter in the quarter and $0.56 for the year. Fred will walk you through some of the details of that later on as well. As you know, we increased our dividend amidst volatility in the middle of the year. We then followed that up with a pretty significant NCIB program, buying back over $30 million at $14.64 per share on average. We'll continue to look for those opportunities. The company is in great shape. Cash flow will grow this year, and we'll continue to balance that between dividend growth, buybacks when there's volatility in the market affords us cheap opportunities to buy stock and growth. Subsequent to Q4, we did announce through Osisko Bermuda an acquisition of a stream with a range of $20-$40 million, and on the high end, 5%, on the low end, 2.5% of the metals from the Tintic property that Osisko Development is in the process of acquiring. Sean Roosen, our Chairman, is also on the line and in the Q&A if there are questions that drift over to the ODV or Tintic side that I cannot answer, he'll be available to help with that. That's just a quick snapshot on slide four, you know, graphically depicting what I said earlier, which is an asset base that is outperforming our expectations. and really just humming at this point. As I've mentioned, 80,000 geos for the year, and the traditional split that you've gotten accustomed to seeing from us of about 75% gold, silver making up most of the remainder. That's obviously when we exclude the diamond ounces from Renard. That was at a 97% margin. It also was right in the middle of our guidance. That's not a typo. It is pretty much exactly 80,000 geos, right in the middle of our guidance previously reported. And I think that's worth stopping on or pausing on a little bit. I think that frankly was a good result, especially in Q4 where we saw not just our operators, but operators across the sector having, continued issues with supply chain. We certainly felt that with one of our mines in the Yukon. Obviously, the Omicron positivity rates skyrocketing for mining companies as they have for the population at large. So that has added complications with respect to quarantines and absenteeism. So it didn't feel like the foot was on the gas in Q4 in the mining sector. Still having achieved the midpoint of our guidance certainly felt like a win. On slide five, we have come out with our 2022 guidance as well as a five-year outlook for the first time in our history, which we hope will be helpful to people as they understand kind of the growth embedded in this company. But on the guidance side, on slide five, first and foremost, we are guiding to 90 to 95,000 ounces of GEOs for the year at a 93% cash margin. We're adding some more streams to that mix than last year. Again, with the reinstatement of Renard, that takes the margin down a little bit, but still quite high, which implies 12.5 to just shy of 20% growth for the year. Pretty material step change for us. I would say we expect Q1 will hopefully be the last quarter where we hover around the 20,000 ounce range. Excuse me, where we've been for most of 2021 before that growth really kicks in. And the reasons for that are pretty obvious. We've got the expansion at Mantos that's underway. It's tying in as we speak, so clearly they have to kind of go through that tie-in process. And then there's also, as you've heard me say a number of times, delays of a couple months there in terms of when they produce and when we receive. But once that flows through, then we're off and running. You'd also remember that for Eagle in the Yukon, Q1 is always a lighter quarter. From a winter perspective, they're going to eventually get through that and have a bit more consistency, but we do expect that to be the case, especially given some pretty extreme weather this year on the West Coast. We also have some smaller assets like Santana and Ermitano, which are ramping up. We have the San Antonio stockpile, which is producing and will start generating ounces off the heap leach this year, and then the biggest other contributors to that skew Q1 and the rest of the year would be Renard, where we're not switching back that stream until May 1st, so not giving ourselves the credit for those ounces or those geos in Q1 primarily. So again, hopefully that's kind of a Q1 that's in line with what you saw from us last quarter, maybe a little bit higher, but we'll see. And then significant growth starting as early as Q2 and for the rest of the year, which should bode well. I think just on a couple points, maybe Renard related, since that is a big addition to this guidance versus last year, and we're very pleased to be able to bring that back into the fold. We said it was a priority for us. I think now is the time where we can credibly do that and have the mine and the operator continue to be in a healthy position. To point to that, or emphasize that in December, I believe it was late in the year, Stornoway paid back to half of the working capital facility to its partners, including us. Our piece of that was just shy of $4 million. We expect the rest of that working capital facility to also be paid back in the near term, but just done in a staged manner for prudence. And some of you may have picked up in our MD&A that the latest selling price was quite high. $170 per carat, roughly. We're not pricing that in for the restart, if you will. That was quite a bit higher than the reserve price, which was more in line with previous sales. But I think you're seeing quite a bit of demand increase, especially on the smaller scale diamonds, which helps us. And frankly, perhaps probably some speculation or more than some speculation, which is more of a short-term phenomenon. But either way, very pleased with the health of that business right now. and it's the right time to turn things on. We'll see if what sanctions, which I was just reading about at Alrosa, which currently are more about providing equity and debt, but sanctions overall mean for diamonds. Likely a boost there as well in the near term. But frankly, I think that's second and third order. I'll point out, it is quite sad seeing what's happening in the Ukraine, especially given the strong and proud Ukrainian population in Canada and Toronto. So hopefully that doesn't end too poorly. It is, again, not to go on too much of a tangent, first time in my young kid's lifetime where they're old enough to ask questions about that war. So those are all pretty sad conversations. I'm sure you're having some of them as well. On slide six, in terms of the outlook, to turn more positive, this is our inaugural five-year outlook, and it's exceptional growth in our minds. You know, a 10 to 12% CAGR for the 5 years, starting from last year as a starting point, is pretty massive for a company our size. Worth pointing out, if it wasn't obvious, that is all organic growth. We're not including any potential acquisitions in there. All that would be external and additional. Other things I would point out, and we've tried to guide, what assets we see coming into those. It's not exhaustive. I mean, for instance, in 2022, there is that San Antonio stockpile. It's just not in the bar. There's a couple of other things. Same for 2026. There are some other assets that are contributing there, but the chunkier contributors are shown. And then beyond that, there's a significant amount of optionality left in the business. And I think, frankly, the back half of our decade is also spoken for. The other things I would say is when you look at the contributors we've included in the time frame, San Antonio and Caribou, obviously held by ODEV, Windfall at OSK, VAC 40, those would be the biggest chunks there, other than increases from our existing mining assets. One of the lenses we used, or the screens that we used, was certainly there's permitting timelines that are embedded into those assets coming along. We've tried to be conservative. It's always a slippery slope, but we've tried to be conservative in terms of delays there. But what we haven't done is overlay financing risk with permitting risk. And so there's other assets, other partners of ours who have guided towards being in production by that timeline. But where we felt that permitting risk was compounded by, a financing plan that wasn't yet crystallized and needed more time for clarity, we left those aside to let that play out, and we felt that was prudent. So we certainly expect there's other things that will happen. 5 years is a long time that will start to shift some of these assets around, hopefully in our favor. Last year was the year we saw a number of our assets end up in bigger counterparties. We expect that trend to continue given the quality of our asset base. So there can be movement. But either way, we thought this was a pretty impressive growth profile, one that we're quite proud of. Other things I'd point out in that optionality bucket, and we can come back around to this in the Q&A later. I'm going to speak to that movement, if you will. Just yesterday we were reading and haven't had a chance to follow up with them, but there's a lot of news in that Agnico portfolio and Agnico press release to bite your teeth into, but one of the things that we took away is their view that in 2024, there could be another 100,000 ounces of additional production coming from things like Amalgamated Kirkland, Akasaba West, which is obviously a Goldex satellite, and Odyssey internal zones. And those are all assets that we have in between a 2 and a 5% NSR on. So that's not embedded into our thinking yet until we get more visibility on it. As well, Casino, another very chunky asset for us where the timeline is a little bit unclear as of yet, but significant progress being made, including the government of Yukon committing to spending $30 million on road construction that benefits the mine over the next couple of years. When you look at Hermosa, where the feasibility study fell late last year, finally, after a bit of a delay, they're guiding to a mid-2023 production decision and 2027 production. So it's just on the other side of that. That's another 5,000 GEOs that can come into focus, even excluding the Clark deposit.
Pine Point, we expect a feasibility study this year, and the timeline there will come into focus. So, and then again, Upper Beaver, waiting for what the synergies mean between Agnico and Kirkland now that the merger is closed. So clearly, that was one of the emphasis of their press release yesterday. So, a lot of good news. Some other assets there that we haven't included, be it Hammond Reef, Altar, Oracle Ridge, where there's some pretty sexy drilling on the copper side in Arizona going on. So, Frank, feel like we have an abundance of riches here that are going to take shape over the coming years. On slide 7, just again, this is not new to you, but worth pointing out that a lot of that growth, most of that growth is still in the Americas, still in the right countries, if you will. And this is always important in mining, and frankly, given what's happening this week and generally happening around us in the mining sector, I don't know if it's ever been more so. So certainly we feel comfortable with where that growth is and who it's being unlocked by, frankly. On switching to some of our assets on the Canadian Malartic side, obviously that story continues to get better. 2021 was a record from a production perspective. It exceeded guidance, I should say. I have to go back and check those records, but certainly based on this geo chart, pretty close if it wasn't. So that's good news on the open pit side. And, you know, we've factored in, importantly, the guidance that we had already received from Yamana and then updated yesterday from Agnico, where there's a slight dip over the next couple of years before things rev up again. So that is worth pointing out as in our guidance. More importantly, on the Malartic side, on slide 9, the underground story continues to strengthen. From a pure progress perspective, the headframe is complete, the collar is complete, the shaft sinking is meant to be starting later in the year. It will then take 4 or 5 years to finish the shaft and to do underground development. Obviously, there'll be production as early as 2023 from the ramp. But all of that's progressing well and on schedule. There was a small increase in resources this February, about 1 million ounces. Importantly, there was the first indicated ounces as well. But most of the work last year was on infill drilling and some extension work, so we weren't expecting a big increase. What we would expect is with another kind of similar amount of drilling as last year, another 137,000 meters this year, 15 rigs currently spinning. We would expect, a lot of work to underpin resource growth in 2023, a year from now, and the operators, at least one of them, are certainly guiding to the potential being likely for an updated and increased mine plan thereafter. So a lot of further good news expected on this asset. Our flagship's already good for until 2039 based on less than half of the current resources. So this is a story that continues to strengthen. And when you think about the camp, that our founders kind of restarted here. Between 2011 and 2021, there's been almost 7 million ounces produced. When you think about kind of the mid-1930s onwards, that's closer to 14, 15 million ounces. And today, there's 20 million ounces there almost, and it's growing and will grow in leaps and bounds. So you're looking at a camp that's produced and currently sits at 34, 35 million ounces with a lot of growth, which is puts it in pretty rarefied air in terms of mining centers in the world. On slide 10, with respect to some of our other assets, and I will try to go through the next slides quickly, because I did mention I'd try to be quick. On Mantos, that's another really good story for us. You've heard me talk about it. The ramp up there from 4.3 to 7.3 million tons is being tied in as we speak. That will take our geos from about 9 to 10,000 ounces a year, gold equivalent to 16. This year, we're kind of expecting half of that, a bit less than half of that increase, given the dynamics I mentioned earlier from a ramp-up perspective, and then next year on, it's off to the races. You've also heard me say that the only thing that asset was lacking was visibility, and with the merger with Capstone announced in late November, meant to close, I think, in late March, that visibility is now on there, including a first technical report in modern times, and a lot of positivity around that asset. including, you know, the combined group now talking about another expansion. The first one's not done, or the current one's not done, and they're talking about another one to 10 million tons for a pretty de minimis amount of CapEx. And we would expect, and certainly we wouldn't be surprised to see some of that commentary play out as soon as the deal is closed in March. That would take our ounces up significantly and turn this into another flagship behind behind Malartic. Which I touched on earlier, you know, nice to see the ramp up in H2 in the second half of last year. Expect that to get finished this year. They're already moving on to Project 250 to get to 250,000 ounces during calendar year 2023. And we look forward to them getting back to the exploration side of things in a more earnest way. Yesterday they announced the first amount of deeper drilling since I think it was 2017. On the pits themselves, which were quite interesting, you know, some intercepts to point out 175 meters at 1.2 grams from 150 meters depth, 50 meters at 0.8 from 400 meters depth. Early days, but nice to see the grades increasing at depth. So we've always thought there's the potential to expand the pits deeper. That's on top of the satellite potential at properties like Raven, which we think are quite productive and prospective, have been backlogs from an assay perspective, but we think Victoria is on the cusp of catching up with some of those backlogs and coming out with some pretty interesting drill results. Eleonore, it was nice to see the reserves increase after kind of resetting the bar over the last couple of years. Nice to see them growing back with a 44% increase in reserves. And CV likewise, net of depletion, an 18% increase in reserves. Feeling like, certainly based on their commentary, that they're going to be getting ready to talk about growth at CV, whether it's mine life extension or on top of that. So that asset looks like it's in good shape. I'll jump past 11, but I think the story would be the same if you talk about Island, talk about Lamaque, talk about some of our other assets. But in the interest of time, I will move us to slide 12. And comment on some of those growth assets underpinning that five-year outlook, starting with the assets within Osisko Development, Cariboo and San Antonio. Some of you have listened to Sean's call just ahead of ours. It's a milestone-rich year for us on the ODV side, with Cariboo going through feasibility study, permitting, bulk sample that will be run through the ore sorter, all of that tracking reasonably well with respect to timelines, with the usual kind of to-ing and fro-ing. The Tintic acquisition, we're all quite excited about, and certainly the catalyst that it's provided to help finance the entirety of the asset base is quite impressive with, I think by the time it's done, over 230 million Canadian, which will have been raised. That will dilute our ownership in Osisko Development, as we did not contribute from 75% to 45% pro forma when those deals closed. But importantly, it's dilution for the right reasons. We're quite happy to see that asset come in, the funding that followed to now look, you know, to now go after those assets in a meaningful way. On San Antonio, I mentioned earlier that the stockpile is now under leach or starting to be under leach, so that will start to trickle some benefit to us and to ODEV. The work there that's gone on over the course of 2021 and that's continuing now, and the news flow that will stem from there kind of underlines and underscores what the group thought we would see there in terms of potential, both oxide and sulfide. So we look forward to that story playing out over the coming months. But all that bodes well, and the next key milestone there will obviously be the permit on the bigger Sapuchi project, which will drive timelines from there. And hopefully that is something that can happen the second half of this year. Windfall within Osisko Mining is a pretty stellar asset. It's the size and grade combination there with 3.29 ounces in M&I at 10.5, almost 7 million ounces total, still growing, still new discoveries being had, like Golden Bear, which they started to poke into. That's a pretty special asset in the right location. So we're looking forward to the feasibility study, adding more meat on the bone again this year. the endorsement from Northern Star on that convertible financing was obviously a shot in the arm. The joint venture itself obviously has been terminated, but I think what you see there is a market that's frankly changed. The scarcity value of an asset like Windfall, and I don't know what other assets are like Windfall, is pretty special. And so we look forward to seeing that that story continue to grow and evolve and take shape over the course of this year. With Upper Beaver and AK, or the Kirkland Lake Camp, which was within previous Agnico, will now be benefiting from the new Agnico infrastructure that came over from the Kirkland side. There's a lot of good things happening there. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we look forward to seeing the Upper Beaver synergy timeline so that we can factor into where it fits in. Is it in the next 5 years? Is it just on the cusp or on the other side of it? That's what we're waiting to see there. They've talked about in their presentation yesterday, I think they described it, well, not I think, it's on this page, as a 150 to 200,000 ounce per annum type asset, so 3 to 4,000 geos for us. They also talked about AK potentially being in production as early as 2024, so just drifting over from Macassa at the 40,000 ounce per year rate. That's another 800 geos for us we haven't factored in anywhere. And as I mentioned, just a lot of good news there as they get their feet under them as a new Agnico emerged, Agnico Kirkland. So we look forward to that story unfolding for us. And then on Back 40, which is a significant contributor to us, on the kind of closer to the back end of that 5 year outlook, expecting a feasibility, in 2022, we agree with the plan that Gold Resource is following of a smaller open pit, bigger underground, less of a environmental footprint. So we look forward to seeing them go through those steps. And as I mentioned to you earlier, we think we've embedded enough potential delay to still be on the right side. I'll jump ahead just to get things over to Fred a little bit. You've seen these transactions from us on slide 13. We think they're all really good contributors. Spring Valley, we've now seen Waterton sell one of their assets in Nevada for $200 million U.S. This is bigger, and I think they've unlocked a lot of value on this asset. So we look forward to some more clarity, maybe even as early as this year. TZ, we're very happy to have gotten in on that asset and have G Mining advancing it with a construction decision this year. And the West Kenyan royalty that we picked up on kind of north of 1 million ounces, a very high grade, looking forward to an exploration update there in the very near term as well. Last slide that I will talk through on 14 is that Tintic acquisition. I think you've heard from both Sean and I on it quite a bit, so if there are more questions, we can deal with it in the Q&A, but quite happy to have that asset within the ODEV portfolio here in the near term. Happy as well to have structured a stream on it. We gave a range, and obviously the equity financing thereafter was upsized quite a bit, so we'll see where we fall within that range. But either way, 2.5% to 5% of the metal stream there, which we think will be a significant contributor. Obviously the disclosure needs to catch up. It was held in private hands. They didn't need 43-101s, they just were mining it. But the new high-grade, ultra-high-grade discovery there in the T2, T4 zone is quite special. We look forward to seeing it kind of evolve. But when you think about 2,300 samples collected over a 200-plus strike length, meter strike length, returning 93 gas per ton gold plus a lot of silver, so that all bodes well. So adding some capital, adding some modern mining techniques, the technical team behind ODEV to that, I think, is going to take this asset, this mine, to the next level, and we look forward to seeing the news flow and the picture be painted in. And frankly, not just the tricksy portion of it, it does sit on 17,000 acres, 14,000 of which are patented in a very productive mining district. So a lot of head frames, and this T2 zone was, I think, something like 44, 45 feet away from Kennecott mining in the mid-90s, and they never stumbled upon it. So there's a lot of head scratching to do and a lot of revisiting of that land package, both from this mine's perspective, from a high-grade perspective, base metal polymetallic potential, as well as copper porphyry potential, which is what Ivanhoe Electric is chasing on the boundaries. So that's a, turned out I talked for longer than I expected to, which is kind of normal. But with that, I'll pass it on to Fred on slide 15 to walk you through a couple more details on the financial side, and then we'll conclude with Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandeep. Bonjour, merci de vous joindre à nous ce matin pour la présentation de nos résultats du quatrième trimestre de l'exercice 2021. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. As discussed by Sandeep, 2021 was a very good year for us in line with our expectations. We have met our guidance with strong deliveries from our partners, despite some challenges with COVID for some operators. And our results have led, again, to record revenues, cash margins, and operating cash flows from our royalties and streams business. If we go to page 15 of the presentation, we recorded record revenues of $199.6 million in 2021 compared to $156.6 million in 2020. Cash flows from operating activities were $106 million on a consolidated basis. For the royalties and streams segment alone, cash flows from operations have reached a record $153 million compared to $114 million in 2021. On page 16, we present a summary of our net loss and adjusted earnings. The consolidated net loss of Osisko shareholders was $23.6 million or 14 cents per share compared to net earnings of $16.9 million or 10 cents per share in 2020. The consolidated net loss was due to non-cash impairment charges and mining operating expenses incurred by Osisko Development in 2021. On a consolidated basis, adjusted earnings were $59 million or 35 cents per share, comprised of adjusted earnings of $94 million or 56 cents per share for the royalties and stream segment, and an adjusted loss of $35 million from Osisko Development or 21 cents per share. On page 17, we have a summary of our quarterly results with additional details for the royalties and streams segment. Including 19,830 GEOs in Q4 for a total of 80,000 GEOs in 2021. We generated gross profit of $35 million in Q4 to end the year at $139 million compared to $104 million in 2020. Operating cash flows of $35.1 million were generated in Q4 by our royalty and streaming business for a total of $153 million in 2021. On page 18, we have a breakdown of our cash margin for Q4 and the years 2021 and 2020. In Q4 of this year, the cash margin on our royalties reached $34 million, and the cash margin on our streams amounted to $12.7 million, for a total of $47 million in Q4, which brings the total cash margin for the year to a record $187 million. On page 19, we present the progression of the dividends paid to our shareholders since the creation of Osisko Gold Royalties. Over $184 million have been returned at the end of December, in addition to $85 million used to repurchase a total of 6.7 million shares under our NCIB programs. And finally, on page 20, you will find a summary of our financial position. Our consolidated cash balance was $116 million at the end of 2021, including $82 million for Osisko Gold Royalties and $33 million for Osisko Development. Osisko Gold Royalties held investments having a value of $255 million at the end of December, in addition to our investment in Osisko Development, valued at over $400 million. Our debt was stable during the year with over $500 million available under our credit facility, which was increased in last July and extended until 2025. We've also acquired a total of 2.1 million shares under our NCIB program for $31 million in 2021. We've also acquired an additional 250,000 shares in 2022 for $4.9 million. So in summary, 2021 was a year where our main assets have continued to perform strongly, and we have seen several of our partners announcing great exploration results and expansion programs for their production. I will now turn the call back to Cindy for closing remarks and questions.
Thanks a lot, Fred. And I think we can forego the closing remarks and operator, open it up for any Q&A, please.
Certainly. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Pour poser une question, appuyez sur l'étoile suivie par le numéro un. And once again, to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. And we do have a question from Mike Gelman from Bank of America. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi, Sandeep and Sean and everyone. Sandeep, I was just wondering, with the windfall with Northern Star not participating as a joint venture partner, and John Brzezinski was on Bloomberg saying that he's going to build it himself, Does this have potential for a streaming deal to help finance a project for Osisko Gold Royalties?
Yeah, look, hi, Mike, good morning. Look, certainly even before and certainly after that announcement, the team there at Osisko Mining can build this mine themselves. They're certainly capable of it. And they can finance it in a wealth of different ways. I think there's John has always been quite prolific from a funding perspective. He has a lot of equity, a lot of cash on the balance sheet. The number obviously will come into focus with the feasibility study later this year. But he has a lot of opportunities in which he can go. Short answer to your question is I certainly hope so, but I'm not going to hold my breath either. I think there's a lot of potential for John to fund that through the equity he has, more equity debt, et cetera. If stream comes into focus there, certainly we'll be eager. It's a pretty exceptional asset, and certainly we trust the team that's currently pushing it forward. So too early to tell, I guess, Mike, but no shortage of options for them as they move forward.
Okay, thanks. Second question, going to Canadian Malartic, on the Yamana call, they said the potential for a second shaft on the project, possibly, I guess, to the east. As you know, you can see it on your slide, mineralization plunging to the east. And I just wonder what you think of that. That should be positive for your royalty, more production.
I like it. No, this might be the only conversation. I guess I missed it, my bad. But I usually do mention that. I mean, look, what I was trying to guide to is just that. This year, we expect the ounces to grow significantly or over the course of this year. Last year, the focus was infill drilling. There wasn't enough extension drilling closely enough to add to those ounces. We think they'll complete that exercise. You know, when you think about the infill drilling, it's going to unlock more of the resources that currently are in the mine plan. And remember that only half of the current resources are on the mine plan, less than half now. So that will add, at the very least, mine life. Then when you add in that extension work, especially from East Goldie, that will add ounces, we think, in bunches of millions, given the continuity there. So I think, you know, yes, every time we've heard at least one of the operators talk about it, there's a comment that at some point, you know, you're going to stop just adding decades to mine life and sink another shaft conceptually and put more through the mill that will only be at a third full. So, yeah, that's something we certainly look forward to. If I had to guess, I'd say, this year is a resource growth year. Next year, that gets put into a revised mine plan. Either way, there's success coming there. It's either coming in the form of material additions to mine life, but more likely than not, it's coming in the form of additional ounces. And when you think back, what is it, a year and a half now? Maybe even more. You know, the story was uncertainty as to whether the partnership would build the underground. Then it was, is there a gap year or more between the open pit and the underground? That's now gone. It's turned into a little bit of a dip. I think if you fast forward a year again, that dip will turn into at least flat production where the mine continues to produce at its current types of levels. So, yes, short answer is I like what I hear there.
Okay, and just lastly, if I could put Sean to work. I wasn't on the OD the conference call. If it's happened already, I don't know. Just wondering, Sean, what do you envision for production from Caribou and San Antonio? Thanks.
Sure, Mike, I'll jump in. The profile right now is that BL2 on the Caribou project is in production. We expect 20,000 plus ounces this year. The QR mill is up and running. We have a bulk sample planned to go underground here starting here in Q2. And then the transition, we're looking for the EA approval and early works permits to come out probably by the end of 2022 for the larger Caribou project. And we would start the portal and hopefully get underground at Cow Mountain and have some transitional material going to the QR and continuing to optimize our ore sorter. But we'd be looking to have the full concentrator built out in Wells by the 2024 and set the table for at least the PA production of 180,000 ounces a year coming out of that. And as you know, we increased that mill production from 4,000 to 4,750 tons a day for this. So we are setting the table for a larger project there, Mike, and we continue to see that that evolving, and certainly the work that we did in 2021 has encouraged us. There's 152,000 meters drilled in there, and the project continues to strengthen. San Antonio, we're in production right now with the stockpile. We have 16,000 ounces and a million-ton stockpile that we want to recover in the short term, and the full permit for the Tapuchi open pit is underway, and we hope to have that permit available to us by the end of Q4 this year. And we have a 15,000 ton a day plant that we purchased earlier that's on site. So we'll be looking to ramp that up for $10 to $25 million investment, depending on how aggressive we get in the early days. Two small scale productions on the go there, plus the Tintic asset. Hopefully we'll close that up in this quarter, in Q2. And they're in production as we speak, so we would have three small-scale producers by the end of 2022, transitioning to much larger production through 2023 and 2024. So I think we set the table pretty good for that one, Mike.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. And I'll see both of you guys in the lobby bar next week. Thanks. Take care.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Alan. Look forward to being warmer.
Our next question comes from Puneet Singh from IA Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Puneet.
Hi, good morning. Just at Renard, since it's going to contribute again, I see last year they sold about 1.8 million carats. Is that the run rate for production on an annual basis we should look forward to? And also, if I'm recalling correct, most of the production was coming from those higher grade R2, R3 areas, and then it would go lower grade later. Is that still the plan there, or what's the latest update now that that asset's doing better?
Yeah, look, I think I would say, some variability is normal, but I think that run rate that you're looking at for 2021, probably about right, at least for the next few years. They're down, I think it's around the 600-foot level. You're right as well that as they get lower there, the grade will drop a little bit. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head right now, but I think for the next several years, we've got kind of a mine plan that will be pretty steady. Thereafter, I believe, we'll see, they'll see what the gold price looks, the diamond price looks like and decide where to take the development from there. And there's also still some exploration upside there, frankly. So I think for the first part of your question, yes, probably relatively steady. The biggest change will frankly be, the biggest variability will be how we turn those carrots into geos, if you will. But we've tried to be conservative. And then thereafter, our primary focus is turning the stream back on, which is job one. And then with the cash they're building up right now, they can start to look forward to the future. It's been obviously tough for them, kind of living hand-to-mouth for a little while for the last 2 years. So it'll be nice for that team to have some more flexibility.
Okay. And do you think they'll do more larger-scale exploration probably in the next couple of years, let it run for a little bit, get more cash, and then go from there?
Yeah, look, I think the idea is, walk before you run, but I can tell you that even with the diamond prices that they were benefiting from before, there has been, or there currently is some exploration work going on. So when you take a, when you zoom out a little bit, you know, they paid back half the working cap facility end of last year. They'll probably pay back the rest of it this quarter. In process, they've also been doing some, you know, not major, but some exploration work in particular into those lower zones to firm up those grades and hopefully tighten up some of those grades. So yeah, they're doing a lot of good things, and certainly the mine is night and day from where it was when, you know, pre-COVID, when diamond prices hit a low of, you know, we're averaging like $70 a carat and hit some lows in the mid 60s. So, you know, what a difference a couple of years makes.
Yeah, definitely. Glad to see it going to contribute again. Thanks, Andy.
No problem, Puneet. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Josh Wolfson from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Sandeep. Had a question on the guidance for 2022. The numbers, at least relative to our forecast, were a bit better. You know, part of that's Renard and the diamond pricing. And I was wondering, what the remainder components would be. Mantos presumably is a portion of that. I'm just wondering if you could maybe reference what contribution year-over-year change you would expect from Mantos, given it is a ramp-up year, and then if there are other key assets, you know, that would be helpful for us. Thank you.
Sure, Josh. Good morning. I think there's a few things going on in 2022 versus 2021. One, to just take a step back, to take a step lower before we talk higher, we've, as I said earlier, we've taken into account the guidance from Agnico and Yamana on Malartic. It's actually a touch below. So, you know, based on their numbers, we'd expect, about 3,500 less GEOs in 2022 versus 2021, just the normal variability and mine sequencing of that mine. So we got to get those ounces back first before we get to the growth. So it's pretty impressive that we can have this guidance in front of you. Renard, even from May onwards, is a chunky contributor to that growth, which is great to have back. Mantos, you point out, we haven't given an exact, it's not an exact science, so we haven't given an exact number, but we're kind of guided to halfway between that current run rate and the 16,000 ounces post expansion. Of GEOs, so that'll fall in between. There's also the additions of San Antonio, first Santana and Hermitano, which are small, but hopefully will work their way towards their 1,000 ounce per year steady state contributions. The stockpile from San Antonio will contribute. The Eagle ramp up, we think, will conclude. So there's a number of things, many of which are kind of on existing assets, but then some new assets that are starting to contribute, as well as some VL2 ounces in there. So that's generally the makeup of that difference, and we're pretty excited about it.
Okay. And maybe specifically on San Antonio, is there any way you can kind of quantify what would be reflected within the guidance for that asset?
Well, I think, not to put words in his mouth, I mean, I think, you know, the stockpile is kind of currently starting to percolate. Talked about first gold pour, Sean, in Q1, early Q2. So we'll see what the ounces are there. It's not going to be a major contributor to us, but it will certainly be nice to get from that stockpile. Sean, I don't know if you're obviously on, but what was the number? I think it was kind of...
It was 16,000.
Overall, that can go in the stockpile.
Yeah, we're seeing 16,000 ounces recoverable in that stockpile at present. Hopefully, we'll be able to get that done. And then if we can get some early contribution from Sapuchi, the main pit, we got an option to maybe put a little more on the pad. But that's where we are right now until we have a permit on Sapuchi.
Yeah, so it's a nice contributor, just stockpile alone, and obviously the bigger milestone there is the permit that will drive the timing of that will drive when the Sapuchi ounces can start to contribute, which are obviously much more significant.
And then on the Trixie acquisition or stream funding, you know, there was a range that was provided, which I'm assuming was contingent on what the funding was that ODEV would raise. With ODEV funding, you know, having better visibility now, is there any sort of perspective you have on what OR's contribution would be toward that stream?
Well, look, I won't put Sean on the spot. I think from our perspective, we were quite happy with as much as we can get, but even on the lower bound, I think it's a great result for us that Odin was able to go out there and raise as much as they did. We thought the asset, once people started to understand it, would resonate. It certainly happened a little bit quicker than I think any of us expected. So, regardless of where it is, obviously you're right, there was more equity raised. So it wouldn't be shocked to be on the lower end of that. But regardless of where it is, we're very happy to have that contribution to us, which we think will contribute for a lot of years once the picture gets filled in. And then obviously the bigger impact for us is on our equity ownership in ODEV, which we're also quite pleased about. So that will come into focus as the transaction gets closer to close. But, you're kind of thinking along the right lines, I would suspect, Josh.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Just from my side, I think any royalty on this property is going to be important.
Our next question comes from Don Blythe from Paradigm Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Sandeep. Apologies if I asked something you covered. I joined a few minutes late. But, with the consolidation of ODB into your results, currently obviously drags down the performance of the royalty business. Now that this financing has diluted you under 50%, will you be reviewing whether or not to unconsolidate ODB in your financials?
Hi, Don. No, we didn't in fact cover that, so it's new ground. Look, I think we're not diluted today. It'll happen, but just to point out, we still own 75%. The transactions are kind of closing or leaning towards closing in late March, maybe drifting into April, but that order of magnitude. And thereafter, we'll be down, as you point out, to the 45% level. So this is kind of what we had always said, is we were going to let the market finance ODB. Obviously, quite happy to get a stream on a new acquisition. That's our business model. But overall, let the market finance ODB. And Sean's been very prolific at that in his history, and certainly with ODEV. So with that, we are miles ahead of where we were, if you will. At 75%, it was tough to talk about that, although we talked about it internally. At 45%, I think we're a lot closer. I've been clear, I think, with everybody as well, that there's no bright line at 50. There's no bright line at 50, nor is there a bright line anywhere. So it's a combination of things we talk about with our auditors and amongst ourselves, but a lot closer. So I think that's something that we'll continue to talk about internally, and when the right time is, we'll come back and tell you. But certainly we know that that's a hiccup, to say the least. It does provide a bit of noise. At the end of the day, we've done our best to segment that information, but I fully realize, Don, that until we can cut that tether from a financials perspective, it's going to be an issue, and certainly you can expect that all of us on the OR and ODEV side are cognizant and motivated about it.
Okay, excellent. No, but you have definitely been doing what you said you were going to do in terms of letting ODEV finance itself become a separate entity. And so definitely good to see that, and heading in the right direction. Thanks.
But maybe yeah. Just a couple of pieces of color on that one, guys. With the financings that are underway closed, plus the cash and the equity book, ODB should be sitting at about $320 million plus between the proceeds of the financing, cash on hand, and the equity book. And my goal, Don, will be to turn ODB into a dividend-paying company. Hopefully we can turn that viewpoint around over the short term to near term.
Excellent. No, it's the equity could be a pretty important component for sure.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Trevor Turnbull from Scotiabank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hi. Sorry about that. I wanted to ask about one of the projects that's in the five-year guidance and one that isn't. I guess the first is Back 40. I was I could probably dig into it, but I haven't had a chance to see what Gold Resource Corp has been saying. But are they pretty confident, I guess, that they will be up and running within that five-year window? Or maybe just give us some color, Sandeep, on why you're putting it in the five-year window, why you feel confident in that project.
Yeah, happy to, Trevor, and good morning. I'd say, look, that is obviously one that is going to be a bit trickier, but we think we've built in enough conservatism there on the permitting, and that's the major item there. Gold Resource and ourselves see the asset in the same way. We were very happy to see them come in as our partner, as our new partner last year. They've got a very similar asset in Mexico that they're currently mining. They want this to be their growth asset for a longer life view as what they're currently mining, but they have the market cap, cash, access to capital to build it. So that's why we felt comfortable that they're the right group to do this with. Clearly, the permit is the hurdle. There's a feasibility study that's on track for this year, and that will form the basis to go through that permitting exchange again. Obviously, there were setbacks in 2021. Frankly, with a plan that we always disagreed with, but ultimately it has to be run to ground with a larger open pit and a smaller underground. I think the view was they were too far down the track to change. That's why pencils have erasers. So we're happy with the new track, smaller open pit, less underground, no need for a wetland permit, which is where they got bogged down last time. And with that in place, we think we've added enough buffer that they can certainly build it within that time frame. So that'll be one that you can continue to test us on as the permit picture unfolds over the course of the next year. But we felt it was, especially given that it's earmarked, it's not like we didn't highlight it. And all of us, I think, will be tracking that progress over the coming year, 18 months.
Yeah, it certainly helps that they're sidestepping the wetland issue if they can. My other question was really with Falco and the Horn 5. That's potentially a very material project when it does come to fruition. And just wondered if you could maybe talk a little, or maybe Sean can talk a little bit about some of the kind of next steps and what we're really watching for to feel better about when that, putting a pin on the timeline on that.
Yeah, no, Trevor, it's a good point. And I think, frankly, both Horn 5 and Pine Point, which are assets that we quite like in our group of family, in our group of companies, we've put them out for the time being. With respect to Horn 5 specifically, and this is kind of what I said earlier, is, including in our family of companies and others, when there was, permitting risk, we tried to account for it. Obviously, all these assets in the development space have permitting timelines. We tried to factor those in. But what we didn't want to do is overlay permitting risk with financing risk. That's kind of what I was getting to, whether it's DAC 40 or certainly whether it's assisted development and OSK. As those chunky assets move forward, we see the line of sight to how financing comes together. When there's companies that have a financing hurdle that's a multiple of their market caps, we didn't think it was reasonable for us to factor them in until there's more clarity. So we do have in that optionality category companies that are guiding production within the next 5 years, and certainly we hope they will. But we wanted to wait until we had that visibility before putting out inaugural guidance, or not guidance, but outlook on that 5 year basis. So that would fall into that category. Pine Point would be another. There's several, frankly. So as there's more clarity, we're happy. We'll be very happy to shift those ounces forward, but we just felt we should wait. Specifically with your question on progress at Horn 5, look, I think they're making meaningful progress, certainly on one of their two issues, which is the governing relationship with them and Glencore, who have the smelter on the surface. They're working through what they call an OLIA, which is an operating license, forget the I, but agreement. And they've made progress on that, but it's a pretty intensive document. So it's gone from term sheet to final documentation, taking a little bit longer, but that's one key hurdle. And I think everyone is driving towards the same goal there. So eventually that will get cleared. And then they'll move forward to looking to crack the financing nut. But frankly, 9 million ounces of gold equivalent is important.
in Quebec. It's important. It's even more important. And you're right. It's a chunky contributor to us. Again, to have such a chunky contributor, whether it's them or Casino, you know, those are 25,000 ounce a year contributors, assets that I believe deserve to be built. It's just a question of when. So when you have those types of things in your back pocket, needing only one of them to work, and we have a list of them, that's a pretty enviable position to be in.
No, I can appreciate that. And I guess you kind of touched on what I was getting at with Horn, and that is you're still Falco's at the table trying to kind of hammer out the final arrangements with Glencore. I know it's always hard to talk for other companies, but do you have a sense of, is this something that Glencore seems focused on, or do you feel like this process is at all backburnered by them, or how would you characterize their intentions towards Horn at this point?
I think it is the former. Like, this is important to the health and, you know, future of what is a very important asset for them at the Horn smelter, which is what leads to delays and long timelines, but it also, I think, leads to an ultimate positive result. And even in my, you know, my limited interactions there, I would tell you that I do believe they are focused on it and it's important to them. Same token, it's a very large organization and they have a lot of other things to do. Many and most of them take precedence, but I would say despite that, I've been very pleasantly surprised as to how much effort goes into this file, and I would assure you that it is important for them and for us.
Well, good. Yeah, it's better to get it right than to be rushed on it. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Pretty complicated. No problem, Trevor. It is a pretty complicated piece of business, and you're right. You want to do it right the first time.
Great. Thank you.
We have no further questions in queue. I'd like to turn the call back over to the presenters for any closing remarks.
Well, look, thank you, operator, and thanks for taking an hour with us on, again, what is a pretty busy day, but a great kind of day for us, a great kind of phase for us, one where there's an important amount of growth in the company. It's some of the best development assets in the business. So whether it's the growth on our core existing mines or growth from the development pipeline, I think the cash flow generation and the diversification that will come with it from this company is going to be pretty special over the course of this decade and every year in between. So thanks for your time and be well. Thank you, operator.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.